Excuse me. Hey, boys. Yeah, you. Yeah. You got something to say? Share it with the whole class.
Hello and welcome to The Back of the Class, a guide to education from the kids at the back of the class. Thanks for those people who have decided to follow us so far. We can be found on iTunes by searching for The Back of the Class, and we can be reached via email at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com. Also, we've started a brand new blog for the show at thebackoftheclass.blogspot.com. This is where we'll be linking to things we talk about on the show and generally making a nuisance of ourselves. So check it out. Give us your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. Sounded so sincere.
Well, I had a much better speech on Tuesday, but that didn't happen.
Simon was
I feel bad for Patrick. He has to say this every show. That's hard work.
Yeah. Each week in our show, one of us brings an educational resource into the discussion. We spend about 20 minutes discussing it, and then we spitball. That's the part of the show where the two people who didn't bring the material in get to really lay into the person who did. As always, I'm Patrick O'Shea, an assistant professor of instructional technology at Appalachian State University. Joining me, as always, is Simon Richmond, a technology associate at Educational Development Center, and Daniel Curry Corcoran, the hardest working man in show business and the king of psychedelic funk, but also a guy who needs to look at his calendar more often.
It's a pleasure to be here tonight, though. Really enthused.
Let's see. So tonight's topic is brought to us by Danny. So I'll turn it over to him to introduce it and give us his thoughts.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It is always a pleasure to be here with you two guys. I always look forward to it, even though if I am tuning in on the wrong day sometimes. But you will forgive me, of course. Had a little tomatoes.
It's really tough sometimes.
Sometimes it is. I mean, sometimes, you know, you got to make tomato soup before you can do things. I mean, it's just what happens.
I understand.
Yeah. All right, tonight I thought we would change it up to a little bit. We're going to do a little bit. I didn't require any reading tonight, so I'm sure for the ODU grads out there, a little bit of applause. That was a little silent. Sorry about that. I thought I would first spend a little time retracting something. On a few episodes ago, we had really been talking about, I think we were talking about building the better teacher, and I was really commenting on all this professional development and why is it needed. Really, we all know how to be good parents. So obviously from the thing we heard tonight, being a good parent is not really an innate feature. So I wanted to retract that. But I also thought I would give a plug out tonight. We're going to center around a podcast by Dr. Gabor Mate. He's actually a Canadian physician. Who knew? Thanks, so Simon. That's a good. Glad the medical sciences are advancing. The head doctors is incredible. I learned a little something this week, so I wanted to share that with everybody. But I thought we would talk a little bit about the podcast. So you can get this podcast if you go to democracynow.org just do a search on Dr. Gabor Mate. I really was kind of struck. My wife and I were traveling to Virginia Beach for the Thanksgiving holiday, and it just happened to be on, and I really like it. I really took a lot away from it, so I wanted to share it tonight. Dr. Mate is really...
I'll put a link to it on our new blog.
Oh, there you go, on the new blog. Well, that's a good idea, not a bad idea. Well, one of the things he's really talking about here, and I thought was interesting, and a few weeks ago, the laughs were... flowing a little bit when I talked about one of the things we really need to do is we just need to show more love to kids. And that got a few scoffs and guffaws from the other guys on the call. No need to mention any names, but you know who you are. So one of the things I really liked is he was really talking about, in a nutshell, some of the destruction of American childhood. I think so often in our podcast we focus on some of the things that we're looking at education, whether it's technology or teacher training or, the Inuit school, what schools look like. One of my favorite episodes, by the way. One of the things I thought.
That episode rocked.
It was. It was a great
that episode.
Episode
did rock.
And it relates a lot to this topic, but we'll get into that later.
Good. Well, one of the things he was talking about is he was really talking about, as I said, kind of the destruction of American childhood, bullying, but he was really looking at it for why are these things happening? you know, some of the, in the beginning of the podcast, and I hope everybody has a chance to go out and take a look at it. It's about 30 minutes long if you get right into where Dr. Mate begins talking. But he was really, you know, of course, they started about throwing around some really difficult statistics to wrap your mind around. I mean, the diagnosis of ADHD is up 22%, I think he said, from the year 2003. Almost 1 in 10 kids are now diagnosed with some form of emotional disorder, be it ADHD. Of course, he does a lot of talk about autism and whatnot. So it's a little time defining that, you know, what ADHD actually is. Poor impulse control, physical inattentiveness, and other things like that. So I thought it was really interesting.
So one of the things did you have it, right?
Have what?
Well, it sounds like poor impulse control.
Actually, I don't have it. Well, he talked a little bit about adults who have ADHD, like they shop compulsively, and I really thought I did have ADHD, but the only one that I really would is the mental restlessness.
No, poor impulse control.
Yeah. A little bit, you know, here and there, depending on who I'm talking to on any given day. So one of the things he was talking about is kind of how we've really taken in schools, and to get to the education side of this, is that this idea of this, we've really begun this massive social experiment to control kids' behavior and to medicate them and to subscribe medications. And then oftentimes when families go in and we have a diagnosis for ADHD or whatnot, there's really no communication with the family. You know, what does the family unit look like? And I thought that was the most interesting thing about this podcast. But I wanted to get back to that thing a little later about the social experiment to control behavior. So I think, you know, we have another experiment out there, and it's the technology experiment, right? We don't have a lot of real good research out there that says technology does a lot to improve academics and whatnot. So, again, a lot of experimenting we're doing on kids here. One of the things he really got into when he was talking about the destruction of the American childhood is that really talking about how kids develop and the importance for brain development, dopamine levels, which I thought was very interesting. You know, when he talks about ADHD kids having low dopamine levels, some of the experiments they have done in the lab is, they've done, of course, with rats or monkeys, but being taken away from the mother, dopamine levels drop critically. And that was really some of the, I think, the crux of his argument here, is that kids really don't have that unstressed, nurturing relationship with their parents anymore just because of all society things. He goes in a great deal to talk about this post-industrial capitalist society and how we really don't have communities anymore. Kids don't go to school where they live, no neighborhood schools, people don't work where they live, and how all of this has really fueled this stressful environment where kids are not growing up in an environment, a nurturing, unstressed environment. And he really got to the fact that this is impeding their brain development, which, of course, is then leading to other behavioral disorders. One of the interesting things I hope we talk about tonight is this idea that in schools, we don't spend a lot of time trying to get to the crux of the disorder. We just want to, right, we just discipline. Well, it goes into a lot of detail about bullying, and I thought that was really interesting. You know, bullying, he goes into quite a lot of detail talking about how most school boards, all school boards around the nation now really have this zero tolerance on bullying. What happens is that the bully is, expelled, disciplined, gotten out of the school environment. But he was really saying about these type of actions are not deliberate actions, but they're really actions that come from this poor emotional connection, lack of, the brain developing at an early age, and that we have to spend some time understanding these underlying conditions. And I just thought this has, I thought it has a lot of merit for the other things. If we're going to change education, but at the same time, we basically have our communities breaking down around us, what can we really expect for schools to do? So I hope you guys had a chance to listen to it. I thought it was really good, and I'll see what you guys think or what you took away from it.
So what do you think, Simon?
I thought, this was a very interesting little piece of work. Mate, I guess his name was. Dr. Mate, yes.
Actually, I'm not sure he deserves that. He's Canadian.
So he's only partial, maybe three-quarters doctor.
Yeah, maybe we'll call him
Doc. One-quarter Canadian. Yeah, is that what you're saying?
Maybe we should call him Doctet or something like that.
A mini doctor.
And there goes about 100 of our Canadian subscribers.
It's all right.
Yeah, I appreciated this guy's points a lot. He was blaming all of these problems. And to be fair, he only spent a few minutes actually talking about education. He was more specifically talking about society in general. Mm-hmm. And post-industrial capitalist society, modern American society, and the point that kids are not raised in a community anymore. They're raised in a nuclear family, and that nuclear family is extremely stressed. And the stresses that mom and dad bring home from work have a real inhibiting effect on their children's emotional growth, and he was implying their brain development. And that's why he was saying you have bullying upsurges, you have upsurges in the amount of autism, and of course ADHD as well. So he related it back to schools because he was trying to stress that learning happens in an emotionally secure environment when the learner has a sense of attachment to the teacher. That attachment meaning, you know, an emotional connection, respect. You look up to your teacher and you're motivated to impress them. And if you don't have the ability to form healthy attachments to adults, it's going to inhibit your learning. It's going to make you less curious and less experimental and more emotionally secure.
Well, quite a bit about education. You just you had to do a little bit of insightful listening. Sometimes that's a bit of a reach, so I just wanted to make sure.
I think that was I think that was a slight dig on you.
Sometimes. Yeah, that's fine.
No. I don't think I'm actually allowed to spitball, am I?
Sure you are.
Yeah, that's right. Danny's not allowed to spitball this episode.
Getting worried about that.
Yeah.
So there were two phrases that jumped out at me.
We're not really missing anything by Danny not being involved.
At one point, he said, teachers are being slandered because of the failure of society to produce the right conditions for the emotional development of our children. That teachers and schools are being blamed for these kids' failures when it's really society as a whole, which doesn't recognize the conditions necessary for the healthy upbringing of kids. Another point that he made is that schools are increasingly places of pedagogy, when in fact that pedagogy should be secondary. And this is the love theme Danny's getting back to, secondary to being places of emotional connection. You need to begin with the emotional connection before you can get to the learning. So, and it also tied nicely into our talk last week about technology and the socializing kids are doing through tech these days, because he was saying, look, the lack of emotional communication they're getting at home is being filled, that void is being filled by their peer community, which they're accessing through technology. And that's a dangerous place. They're not able to get any real support or any real unconditional love or emotional support from their peers. Peers are cruel. It's a dangerous place to be. Everyone is insecure and retreating into this shell of being cool. And nobody can support or love you like your parents can.
One of the things I thought it really did from last week is it really, you know, you were never able to really kind of verbalize what those important things were, even though we kind of tried to get you to verbalize what those important things were to learning. But I think we see some of that here. That was actually another dig. But anyway, you know, this idea of emotional connection, having relationships with adults. I mean, I think a lot of times in schools we don't spend any time teaching this stuff. We go right into pedagogy you know, with technology and this big social experiment and getting kids to use technology, are we just missing the boat and trying to deal with symptoms and not getting to the root cause of some of these problems?
Well, here's my thought on this. Now, everybody sit down because
I'm sitting.
Brilliance is coming.
let me have a sip of tea real quick, excuse me.
Yes. Now listen, I'm perfectly willing to accept the idea that the physical environment that we place students in, or place kids in, impacts the emotional growth and physical growth of their bodies. I think that the idea that nature versus nurture and your environment impacts your nature, and you know, all of these things are. They're pretty wide widespread, and you know, the idea is not very controversial to say that. But the problem that I have with this is,
are you spitballing already?
No. I mean, this is just an issue of
I think you're trying to get to a point.
Yeah, I mean, this is an issue of this kind of discussion, just in general. I'm trying to figure out what does this mean and what kind of solutions can we put in place. Yeah. And the thing that I came to during listening to this this podcast was the idea that we as a society do not hold parents responsible the same way we hold schools responsible. All right? All of the responsibility is headed in one direction. And it's, you know, through fear mostly. We have schools that are afraid of being sued, and so they put together these zero tolerance bullying policies and those kinds of things because they're afraid of getting sued. But we don't have any equivalent mechanism to say parents should be doing their work as well. And it's assumed that whatever happens in the home is, you know, out of our control. And it is. That's true. But we have to have some sense of responsibility on the part of all participants. Now, how do we get to that? That's the question. And the question I would pose to you, what is the mechanism for getting to that responsibility? It's fine to sit here and say that we need it, but how do we get to it? I mean, that's the practical, that's where the rubber hits the road for me.
Well, I don't know that you can, okay, go ahead, Danny, this is your article.
Well, no, I was just going to say, one of the things that I really took a lot, is this whole concept of bullying, you know, and he says, you know, these are not deliberate actions, they're not deliberate, and therefore they should not be met with punishments. I mean, kids are not acting out deliberately. They're acting out because they have poor emotional connection. You know, they have this, you know, I really like the definition of, you know, when he talked about acting out, and he says, you know, what is acting out? And he kind of compared it to charades and how if you're thrown, we don't know how to speak English anymore. And how, like, if you're thrown into a foreign country and you're not able to tell somebody you're hungry, you kind of act it out, or you would act out your anger. Here we have a whole generation of kids who aren't able to tell, you know, what the problem is, if that problem is some type of an emotional connection. So they act out, you know, like you would expect any child to do. So, I mean, I think when it comes to we do have zero tolerance policies, but I think a lot of the stuff, you know, it's not focused on the actual intervention. It's focused on dealing with the symptom of the problem for how we punish kids or how we discipline children. For bullying, you know, we want to get them out. We want to put them in out-of-school suspension. But we never come around to sit around and talking with the family and developing a type of an intervention plan that needs to be done at home. And I think, you know, parents are responsible for sending their children to school often by law. We have these compulsory education laws. You have to attend school. I don't see why we couldn't hear them to some type of an intervention plan. Now, at that time, it might be too late for kids, but there's got to be some way of connecting kids emotionally back to adults. You know, whether it's through some type of, you know, where the Navy comes in, you know, we're in a naval area here, and try to build relationships with kids at the school. Or
I just Did you say you live in the naval area?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, we're in the Norfolk, Newport News area. A lot of times military will have relationships with the schools. I think step one, to get back to Patrick's idea of, you know, what are some solutions, is right now we don't even have a discussion really being done. Right now it's all on this pedagogy, technology, nothing around the emotional development of children or brain development or anything really scientific. Like in inviting the medical community in, I think sometimes educators, we try to say, this is our job, this is our responsibility, but maybe this is an opportunity for us to reach out to the medical community. Even though he does go to that, you know, most doctors don't really understand ADHD. But again, I think it's, you know, sometimes it takes a village. I think it's going to take a village to educate children. You know, we don't do a lot, I think, to reach out to other sectors and get them involved.
Well, this is a cliche, but it's been, You need a license to learn how
we
to drive a car.
We keep a list of your cliches, though. I write them down. Hold on, let me get a pen.
Okay, good. Write this down, too. I mean, buying a gun, you go through a carefully regulated legal procedure. But
hold on, I got to flip through the bad cliches. Hold on.
Having kids free, nobody, I mean, and that's the problem. There's no prerequisites for parenting. You can have kids, and then you just raise them the way you feel they need to be raised. It's your decision. They're your kids. So coming back to Patrick's question earlier, how do you reverse the flow of responsibility? Can you hold families responsible? No, you can't in today's society. I don't see how you can invent a legal mechanism to do that. But in more traditional societies, there were cultural means of holding families responsible, and that was basically the rules of the community. The wider community regulated what was happening in a family level, and we've lost that community. How we can rebuild communities here in America is a pretty complicated question. I've just moved back from being overseas for years. I'm in a small town in Oregon, a very quiet little suburb here. And I know the people on both sides of me, but there's some kind of taboo about moving further down the street and meeting those guys. Certainly nobody came and welcomed us to the neighborhood when we moved in. It quickly breaks down your sense of obligation and your sense of neighborliness. So how do you reconstruct those social bonds? How do you not fear letting your kids go out into the neighborhood and have them be raised by a community around you? And then how do you tie that community to the school? There's lots of reasons community has broken down. You can blame the automobile. You can blame capitalism and work pressures. But
can't the school kind of operate as some of that rebuilding? I mean, I know.
Well, sure, but then again, you're making it the school's responsibility.
But the school, it doesn't have to be the school's responsibility. I mean, a lot of times we see in many neighborhoods where our schools operate outside of the regular school day. I mean, we can bring parents in. We can offer parents parenting classes. We can offer them free medical exams, but a lot of times in the evening, I think if parents want to say they're working hard during the day or even working two jobs, to have somewhere where they could take their kids to be safe, meet other people around the community, why couldn't schools be the source of our community life?
Well, my kids are in a school like that. We deliberately enrolled them in a charter school that has a huge emphasis on community involvement.
You're not even enrolled in public education and you're on this podcast? All right.
But there's a person full-time at the school. It's a parent volunteer who just coordinates volunteer affairs. And it's a really tough job. She's constantly on the phone begging people to come in. And these are all parents who want to be involved. But it's tough.
Is it a neighborhood school or is it a charter where everybody is kind of coming from all over the suburb, as you described?
Yeah, it's more like that because this is rural Oregon.
Not a neighborhood school.
Kids are busing in from far. And when there is a job, parents show up and help paint or cut the grass or something, but they feel at a loss to really dive into the classroom. It's a foreign environment for a lot of parents, and it's hard for they want to participate, but it's intimidating.
Yeah, I don't think it's. I'm talking a little different, but anyway.
Here's what I would say. All right, I hate to admit this, but I agree with what Danny's saying.
This is like 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's horrifying. I'm sorry. It's horrifying. All right. Here's what I would say. I think that the school can act as a catalyst to rebuild to the community. But it has to do that not just by acting as school for adults, offering them, parenting classes and those kinds of things. It has to be something that, community oriented. Offer a prom for adults. Offer a movie night once a week. Those kinds of things where families can come together and be together for we're going to talk to you and we're going to tell you all of the ways that you're doing the wrong things. No.
Yeah.
We just want school. We can.
Are you saying that you would go to parent prom night at your kid's school?
Sure, why not?
Seriously, you would go there?
Yeah, why wouldn't I? I'm not talking about.
He didn't get to go. Nobody asked him to prom, so he never got to do prom. So, I mean, leave the guy alone.
I'm dying to go to someone's prom. Anyone's prom.
I'll ask you to go. You can be my date next time I go to a prom.
So you're saying keep it social and keep it light and keep it fun.
No, just do a mixture of these things. Not just do one. Do you know? Make it so that there's something for everybody. You're complaining that there's not enough right now for parents. They feel intimidated by these things. Well, if you open the school up and allowed it to be, you know, used for pickup basketball games in the evening, then parents like to play basketball. They'll come in and play basketball. They'll bring their kids, that kind of thing. You don't have to do all business as usual. You can do social kinds of things as well. You get people involved with those kinds of things, and they can be there can be other things. Now, the larger issue is, I don't necessarily think that we have to put in place more rules and regulations to keep parents responsible. I think that we just need to limit the fear factor on the part of schools. That's the thing that it seems to me right now that most of the decisions that school leaders make are based on fear. Fear of losing their jobs, or fear of failing tests, or fear of doing poorly, or fear of being sued. And so they put in place all of these very arcane legal systems, and they lock down internet networks, and they won't allow kids to have cell phones, and all of these things are taboo. And it doesn't reflect the society that people live in anymore. Schools just do not reflect society. And that something has to change. And I think that if parents were seen as a partner with schools, and then these kinds of barriers would fall away. I told my students just, you know, this couple of weeks ago that I wouldn't really necessarily have a big problem with my son's school getting or having less filtering of internet content if I received a weekly or monthly report of all the websites that my son had gone to. Technologically, that's an easy solution to do, and it puts the onus on me to be a partner in this. But we don't do that. We don't do that because we're afraid of what parents might do if they find out that a kid goes to a YouTube clip that's inappropriate. And it's all because what happens in the school is this black box to parents. They don't understand what happens in there. Sometimes they didn't have good experiences themselves, so they're not going back in there for a bad experience to talk to a teacher who treats them like an idiot. There's lots of different ways that we can break down those barriers. Part of it is getting parents to be better consumers of education, to become more informed about the kinds of things that actually happen in schools. And part of it is an outreach on the school's part. If you can build those partnerships and have a true working functional community based around the school and the community working together, then you don't need to have that fear anymore. You can build legitimate, reasonable responses to bullying or those kinds of things without it being zero tolerance. That's what it comes down to for me.
Well, can we come back to the article here?
Sure.
You're saying school should reflect what's happening in society to be more realistic. But this guy, Dr. Mate, is actually saying that society is broken. The whole Western lifestyle is wrong, and it's messing up our kids. So how don't we want to fix society through schools instead of making schools more like society, use them as a tool to fix society?
What's one of the central problems that I think he cites is this whole idea of relationships. We don't spend any time building relationships with one another. We don't spend any time investing in building relationships and really getting to know our students. I think one of the things he really alludes to is that, you know, whether it's technology or pedagogy or discipline, none of our discussions in education these days are spent, and whether that's because of our accountability culture and we got to get through, you know, this inch-deep curriculum over the course of, you know, 180 days, so we don't really have time to build relationships. But what happens is not building these relationships, or kids are not emotionally connected to their teachers. They're, you know, they're connected to their iPods because they can get this media and this stimulus that their peers are sending them. That is the thing for me, and that gets back to the the little bit of laughter, the little bit of merriment at my expense on this idea of showing kids that we care about them. Not just showing them, but really having that as the focus of our day. I mean, I have a short little story. You know, when I was teaching high school English, I had a young lady who stormed in my door day one. First year teacher, was expelled the year prior. And again, this is an inner city school. You know, came in, sat down, and was just like, is all we're going to learn about this year dead white people? Well, what do you do as that as a teacher? Do you get her out for being rude? No. We sat down, we went through, what did we want to read this year? Over a while, this young lady used to come in every day at lunch, would spend her lunch with me, would engage with me, would talk. I learned about her. She was invested in school. Absenteeism, you know, went down from prior years. Invested in a relationship. I mean, you could have teachers that could come onto the blog and talk about this and talk about this, but centrally, I don't think it's a focus of our public school system.
Well, that's a great story, Danny, and connecting
well,
with your kids, connecting with your students, no one's going to argue with that. But what Mate is talking about is getting parents to connect with their kids.
No, and adults.
If we're going to take this from an education perspective, then let's come back to this idea of getting parents involved in schools and parents connecting to their kids through schools. Here's an idea. Up to now, we've been letting parents opt in to volunteer and participate, and Patrick's given some good ideas about how to do that. But why do they even have the choice? Why is the expectation that the kid will be fine at school without them and they can come in once or twice a year? Why don't they have to opt out? Can't someone design an experimental school where the expectation is those grade one kids come in with mom and mom and dad teach the kid how to read?
I mean, what if mom and dad don't read?
Mate complained that parents, paternity leave is so ridiculously short. Why can't it be 6 years of maternity leave? And mom is in the first grade classroom teaching the kids how to read. There's a teacher there to help her. But the expectation is that the learning happens with the parent. And you have a defined role for the parent every day of the school year. And as the kid gets older, and if there are financial pressures and both parents have to work, that can be reduced. But it starts with a high 100% level.
Yeah, see, I didn't think he was necessarily relating parent involvement to schools. I thought
he was really
talking about, yeah, you are. Well, of course, that's because it made no sense. You know, I'm just playing here. But I think you're on a point. I mean, the idea of, but see, the reality I think that we have to deal with is that we have lots of kids now. We have 1 in 10 kids who are, you know, who are diagnosed with ADHD. You know, the what do we do at this? You know, how do we fix that? How do we make some strides in reducing ADHD? But I think we don't have any understanding of what ADHD is. Kids are disruptive. They're not able to sit down in the classroom. Therefore, we take them to the doctor. The doctor diagnoses ADHD, provides a chemical stimulant, which increases the dopamine levels in a student so that they can then sit there. And again, this is what Dr. Mate is getting at. But maybe our dopamine levels could be increased simply by having an emotional, attached relationship with an adult figure. Now, as you get older, it might take harder to develop, but at the same time, I just get to the point of our first step needs to be having some of these courageous conversations and actually saying that it's important and not just we're going to redesign the curriculum or we got to get technology in there, but what are the root things that we need to be thinking about if we're ever going to change anything? And that's just for me. I mean, that's just what I feel about it.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we've reached the end of our time.
No spitballs?
Yeah, what about the spitballing?
Simon, if you want to spitball
really quickly.
Aren't you
doing the monitoring here? I mean, God.
Timekeeper, you should have cut us off earlier. We need a spitball.
Hey, I had the time set on
Tuesday.
Can we
spitball the timekeeper?
All right, I had time set on Tuesday.
Oh, here we go. His clock doesn't work on Thursday.
No, it does not.
He's got to work his third job.
Simon, if you want to spitball, go ahead, spitball.
Please do.
Yeah.
Please do, Simon.
As compelling as this was, this lady interviewing Dr. Mate, she asked him at least twice, what do you propose as a solution? Yeah. And he just ducked the question. He didn't have any solutions. He said, we need more insight. We need to study. We need to be empathetic.
That's an academic.
But I wanted solutions. This guy was bringing up good ideas, and he wasn't able to solve them. Well, that, fair enough. They're really complicated. But if he thought this far about them, can't he just give us, like, a hint of an answer if he's that smart? I mean, he's a Canadian.
Well, he wanted us to do that like we did tonight. He wants everybody to have their own podcast and begin to.
No, I completely agree with Simon on this. You know, this is.
You're not even going to send a unique spitball. You're going to piggyback on a spitball?
I've got my own, and it's coming. But I would definitely agree that if someone is going to make these kinds of statements, that's why I asked, what do we do about it? I'm tired of hearing people complain about the nature of our society, and 50 years from now people will be complaining about the nature of society, and 100 years ago people were complaining about the downfall of society, but no one wants to actually do anything about it. We need to come up with solutions, and that's what I was looking for from the guy as well.
There was no inference on solutions here. See, I took a lot away from solutions.
I don't care about inference. He did not say,
okay, listeners, solution number one is
he poo-pooed the idea of jumping in and taking action. He said, oh, that's such an American request to dive in. That's how you do your foreign policy.
I like to dig in American foreign policy. I thought that was actually very funny.
That is my second spitball. As a Canadian, I just have to say, I'm tired of Canadians dogging Americans. Why can't we all just get along?
Oh, Lord.
I'm serious.
We have Danny saying, why can't we just all love each other? Simon saying, why can't we all just get along?
It just reflects
badly on Canadians everywhere.
And what do you stand for, Dr. O'Shea? Nice.
I would expect
from a postmodernist capitalist pig.
Go ahead.
He was smug. And that's a Canadian problem. And I dislike it. we can have our differences with America. That's fine. We can be very confident about who we are. But why do we have to be arrogant about it? That's our number one complaint about Americans, that they're arrogant. So we're going to be more arrogant than them to show them. I don't get it.
Well, you guys have been copying us for a long time anyway, so I just think it's kind of par for the course. I mean, it wasn't surprising.
But that's
all,
the whole thing. We're not copying. We are a distinct society, but we keep repeating that to ourselves so loudly, we've convinced everyone that we are copying. Does that make any sense?
Well, kind of like the colonized type thing, you know? I mean, not that you were colonized, but I mean, really, I mean, kind of. We use our language and everything, so.
Can I get to my spitball?
Okay, go ahead.
All right, my spitball is actually more aimed at Danny than at the article.
Because the article was an excellent selection.
No. Here's the thing. About, I don't know, over the past month or so, Danny has continuously dug at Simon and I for bringing in what he says are, you know, popular culture articles, blog posts, non-academic kind of things.
I am trying to keep
and
it real
the
here.
The last two things that Danny has brought in are an article that was so poorly written, it was almost incomprehensible, and a podcast. So I think from now on, Danny, you can no longer make comments about the stuff that Simon and I bring in being academically rigorous enough.
That's
not
right.
Fair. I have tried to bring it down because I figured you guys weren't able to rise to the occasion. So I was just trying to bring in some popular culture. I thought it would really help you discuss
you have
it at
to
a
learn
more academic
to
level.
Love us more, Daniel. You have to love what we contribute.
Yes, I am working
on
that.
You have to make this podcast a place of emotional connection.
I'm trying. I love you.
Don't slander us because of the academic failures of our material.
This is what he was doing. This is his. He was writing this down during his tomato soup exercise earlier.
Yes. All right. Well, gentlemen, as always, it's been a pleasure. We're bumping up on 40 minutes right now. So
wow.
I'm going to say.
Cut out the stuff Danny said.
There'll be a long, empty spot. Just a beep.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure, gentlemen.
All right, Simon, As always, nice talking to you, and we'll talk to you later.
Danny, you got, yep.
Danny, the same, only slightly less so.
I still
see you later.
Bye.
Later. Bye.